Hello, greetings, salutations, and all that jazz from the pulpit. I'm Ron Sandak. He's Bob Marks.
Howdy.
He's distant. I'm still social. We're trying to abide by the continuing restraints of the clampdown. The lockdown. Oh, it's a stay-at-home order. That's it. Even though I'm not at home. This is episode 4 of our separate and apart broadcast. Again, I'll speak for myself. I'll let Bob chime in and he can speak for himself. I'm slightly dismissive of the stay-at-home order. I understand the necessity for social distancing. I understand the need to practice smart, defensive, and otherwise common sense-like practices so that we're not doing things that would encourage infection, contagion, extension. But the idea that we're all locked down makes me sick. All right, Bob, speak for yourself.
Yeah, I agree. I was very hopeful that we were going to have some kind of a migratory path out of this with, you know, using this new data we have. And here we are in the same spot through April 30th. But, wow, we can play golf by ourselves. And I think we can now pick up grass seed. Woohoo!
So do you think there's new data or do you just think that there's additional data?
I think there's additional data, and I think there's new data because I think with time, new being they're able to, I think, look at this differently and apply different theories that produces variant data. Yeah, I think it's new and it's building. Something new.
See, I may be playing games with semantics, and I don't mean to, but I will be slightly contrarian with that. I think it's the same variables, the same assumptions, just with new numbers. And what I find aggravating as all get up is Governor Pritzker just gave some semblance of the models, and he certainly has a credentialed scientific team. He revealed his or some portions of his scientific team just yesterday at his daily news conference. And that was wonderful. I mean, I heard from two of the scientists, and they certainly appeared to be highly competent. But what's really aggravating for me is they only showed one chart, and the one chart was if we didn't do this, and here's the result of what we did. And there really didn't seem to be, again, I couldn't see, you know, a really good copy of the chart. It didn't seem to have a material difference. Now, every life is, let me make sure, because in this day and age, if you say, hey, I got a question about the science, or if you say, hey, I'm wondering if this isn't a little bit of overreach, or if you say, hey, don't I have rights to, or hey, you know, this economic impact is really profound. The answer, or I'm sorry, the definition or the response to all that is you want people dead. Yeah, man, I don't want anyone to die ever under any circumstances, but unfortunately, way beyond my capacity. So, and yes, a difference in deaths matters, no question. But invariably, we're talking about the cost of this shutdown, and it's overwhelming. I mean, it's crushing. It's soul crushing, too. And so I don't know how, you know, are any of these scientists going to then take all the data of, you know, alcohol-related health issues, increased drug use, abuse, whether it's spousal and or child abuse, depression. I mean, rank depression due to job loss and lack of employment possibilities. Is that going to be added up? And obviously, people think you just turn the switch in the economy. Man, this is going to have what we're talking about is profound, you know, instance of continued problems going forward. There's just no question about it. So,
yeah.
You know, I was talking with a friend of mine who will remain anonymous about the effects this has with respect to local government. And when I say local government in Illinois, I mean, you know, first, not Chicago. I know everyone thinks that the state sometimes starts and finishes with Chicago. And to watch the governor's press conferences, he's only been in Chicago since March 13 or 17. To my knowledge, he has not had one press conference in Springfield or in any central or southern Illinois location. And to be sure, each and every one of the executive orders, including the one yesterday, which extends the 30-day clampdown, I mean shutdown, I mean lockdown, strike that, sorry, stay-at-home order until May 30th. It doesn't matter if you're in Effingham, Harrisburg, Alton, Springfield, Peoria, Decatur, or Waukegan, Lincolnshire, Park Forest, Dixon, or Chicago. It's the one-size-fits-all. And every one of those towns I mentioned actually have some very distinct differentiations, particularly if you're going to go Effingham to Chicago, which I think is like an 8-hour drive. You know, there are some rightful complaints, Bob, that this one-size-fits-all really doesn't fit very many. Sure, it fits most of the people in the state, but not most of the land area covered by the state. And so I'm hearing grumblings. In fact, did you know that a downstate legislator sued the governor?
I did not know that.
Governor,
please,
yeah,
tell
governor
more.
Sued by Darren Bailey, Representative Darren Bailey, who took a lawsuit that I'm sure he had lawyers prepare and filed it against the governor, essentially arguing that his usurpation of the executive order, well, that he is usurping his executive powers by continually extending which was only a 30-day order or 30-day statute under the emergency powers granted to the governor. I don't think anyone would argue that there really truly is an emergency, but I think at some point in time, someone might say, okay, isn't there time to convene the legislature and shouldn't we go through the ordinary steps of government? And what's fascinating is Pritzker was asked today, you know, hey, look, the Senate's not going to meet. The House isn't going to meet because they can't meet. He goes, no, they can. They're considered essential workers, so they can meet. Well, why aren't they then? I think that's a legitimate question. So yeah. Some people have been asked about the powers, the constitutional powers being undertaken by the governor. I think that's a fair question. You know, what's interesting to me is anyone other than Representative Bailey going to really challenge the constitutionality under federal and state law of a governor acting without or expanded powers and without the legislature? I don't know. I think that's kind of important. What do you think about that, Bob?
Yeah, no, I think it's highly important. I think it's there's no shortage of governors that you're a Constitution guy. I am not. But I sit and I stop and I look at what's going on in varying states, and I'm with you. I don't want to see anybody. I don't even want to see anybody. I don't like people being sick, first of all, let alone going into a serious state of health or even death. I don't even like to go there. But on the same side of it, to your point, you know, the byproduct of this, and I know several people that their businesses just shut down. Their income has gone to zero. And they have young kids. They have, they're moving through life, and now they're sitting here, and they don't have, they have no choice. Their hands are tied. They can't get through to unemployment. So I think it's a question it goes outside of the state, and I'm really interested in your perspective on this as to where is the true authority, and where does it start to become, you know, political overreach, grandstanding, narcissism, whatever label. I don't mean to throw negative tones at it, but for lack of better words, where is that? And I know it's fluid and it moves to different states and there's all kinds of insinuating circumstances, but I'm highly intrigued as to where is it that people's liberty meets authority.
Well, you know, there's an old adage, the country's freedoms and liberties will erode, you know, to the extent people permit it. And, you know, it's amazing. You see in an emergency such as what we're dealing with COVID-19, a willingness to just accept without question, that this governor gets to continue to lead by executive order, by pronouncement, by proclamation. And that should cause pause right there. But many people simply look away saying, look, this isn't time for politics. Well, if not now, then when? Because there's supposed to be checks, even with well-intended good faith servants stepping to the plate in exigent circumstances. So if we were to assume that Mr. Pritzker is simply doing his level best, and I think that's fair, and that he doesn't mean harm, I think that's fair, and that he's only using these powers because he thinks he has to and must, okay, I again think that's fair. But those are all subjective indicators through the eyes of Mr. Pritzker as governor exclusively. This gets to happen only because of the governed, consent of the governed. And so apparently, Bob, right now we're okay with it. But to the question of its legitimacy, certainly the Emergency Powers Act, and I might be butchering the term a little bit, but there's a statute that was passed by the legislature and signed by a governor that gave extenuating circumstances required a 30-day window to lead by executive order. Well, we're well past 30 days now. And so the propriety of continuing to do this, I get it. It's easier just to make proclamations. I get it. It's easier just to execute executive orders. But governing's not supposed to be that easy, because that's scary too. So to your question, you know, I've heard horror stories about the Michigan governor. I hear there's a lawsuit there. What's interesting to me is there doesn't seem yet to be that kind of swell from the bottom up, from the governed, from the consent of the governed. Hey, I now reclaim my consent, or I withhold it, and I want the ordinary course of checks and balances, legislature and governor, co-equal branches, utilized. And I don't know, can't be right now. It isn't that exigent. I get it. It's a scary situation. But there's nothing preventing, in my estimation, the ordinary use of the governing apparatus. Why that's not kind of catching hold, I cannot. To a comment you just made, Bob, it's a lot, you know, the topic of whether the governor has the power to outside the legislature. But, you know, in our little town, that went from two incomes to zero, like snap of a finger. Right. And that is frightening. You know, I've seen estimates. I'd like to see what you've heard. I've seen estimates that, we now have 15 to 20% unemployed, 26 million plus, and almost, 30% of our economy gone away.
Yeah. I've read the same numbers.
Well, that's flipping.
And it grows by the day.
It's flipping frightening. And, I don't know that much of that can be, I don't think any of it can be just turned on like a light switch. But I think a good chunk of that may not come back for a long time. Worry, movie theaters are done. Okay. I don't think, if they come back on, I don't know who's going to go. That frightens me. I think that a lot of the especially higher education, may change. Some of that may be for the good, but I think there'll be fundamental changes in the way people act when they go to damn bars for a long time. I don't think responsible owners would let them anyway. I think you're going to have a lot of table distance at restaurants, which is wonderful, I guess, if you like your own elbow room, but really bad if you're trying to make margin. I just see a lot of businesses utterly failing and not coming back on. Your craft beer industry, you're a craft beer guy. I like craft beer. I think they get killed in this.
I think you're going to see 40 to 50% across the board just disappear. I think that's just right off the board. And the remaining ones, the good thing about that is I think that there will be a stronghold that stays, and I think that will rebound. I think that'll rebound strongly, but I think, especially with these extensions that are going on, you're going to see just a grass fire across the nation of smaller, medium-sized microbrews just disappear.
That's just That's just awful. Well, you know, so what I wanted to chat about now was this little phenomenon. You know, look, I've been accused of being an adroit user of social media for political purposes, of getting messages out. I'll plead guilty to that in my political days. Now I'm just an adroit observer. I post what I want to post because it amuses and or intrigues me. I really don't post for a ton of interaction. Occasionally I do, but with all due respect, I'm not looking for other people's opinions unless I'm searching and testing my own, which is cool. And I do that very rarely. I post informationally, and again, because something piques my interest. And what I've been noticing on other people's pages, and I'm not judging here, is a lot of push politics, push polling, right? This is what I found, this article or poll or this, influencer aligns with my views, and therefore I want to push it out there, which I'm not, there's nothing wrong with that. And you see the back and forth, but there's some really bright lines right now being drawn. And in this COVID world, you are either for these shutdowns and for the preservation of all human life, or you're not. Meaning you can't have any concern about the economy, because if you do show a little bit of concern, it means you're not for the lockdown. And if you're not for the lockdown, you're for people dying. And the logic in that is just, it's preposterous. And frankly, I think
it cannot be more off base.
I think it's mean-spirited too. So what I find interesting is there's a lot of social network shaming and people signing off by stay home. And it's not smile. You see pictures. They have this picture of them. They say, stay home. It's really a not so thinly veiled message to stay the F home, you selfish SOB, if you don't stay home.
Yeah.
And, I find it rude. I also find it condescending and mean-spirited and judgmental and shaming and all that stuff. But I also find it just wrong. Look, I've been reading everything I can on this because there's just so much information. And what I think almost any unbiased person or objective person would agree, the information has been completely mixed and completely evolving. One example, don't worry about wearing masks. Masks are unnecessary. Don't wear a mask. Now it's you got to wear a mask if you go outside, right? So, I could list 10 different things that have just changed on this thing. And, people get to evolve as information becomes new too, right? But anyway, what I find fascinating is a lot of people saying stay home, and they may not know that their neighbors are staying home because they don't have anywhere to go anymore. They lost their jobs. And so it's easy maybe to flip on your computer if you've already been working for home. Let's say you have a career and you've been working for home for years. Good for you. Fantastic. And you're well adjusted to it and you're doing your thing as normal. And that's fantastic. But if you have people who are required now to stay home and are having adjustment problems, it's not cool to pile on. It's also especially not cool if you have neighbors that lost their jobs because of this economy. For instance, maybe someone that used to work for United Airlines or Marriott Hotel or in the travel industry as a whole, which has just been decimated, right? By one example, I just find it disheartening that we have taken such harsh positions. Look, I was talking with a friend of mine about DuPage County numbers. And again, I don't know if the numbers are accurate. So I use these numbers right now with a star or an asterisk or an underline, meaning they're not my numbers. I don't know if they're accurate, but I'm told there's like 118-ish unfortunate deaths in DuPage County attributed to COVID-19. And that's heartbreaking. To me, what's even more heartbreaking is 81 or so are from people that were in nursing homes or assisted living facilities. They're like sitting ducks in those facilities.
Yeah. Yep, they sure
so
are.
So almost 80% of the people died in DuPage County, a county of 1 million people, by the way, 1 million, is attributable to some nursing homes or assisted facility assisted living facilities, why weren't those people in hospitals? Oh, because we were worried about not, you know, we had to flatten the curve, right? Flatten the curve and not overwhelm the hospitals. I can guarantee you, because I've talked to people in the medical industry, the hospitals in DuPage County, by and large, were not overwhelmed. Sure, they were busy. And yes, what they do is absolutely critical, but they were not overwhelmed. There were beds, there were ventilators, there were ICU units. I don't know why those folks in nursing homes weren't out of those nursing homes. I don't know why they're not out of them now. I can't get an answer to that. Happened.
Yeah, no, I agree.
New York.
I agree. If you watch, New York, it's on numerous states, but if you listen to our governor, he talks about how, you know, the numbers of usages of hospital beds, ICU beds, has stayed or dropped only because we brought more quantity, more supply to the marketplace. And I have issues with that. I agree with you. We have 3,000 beds down at Navy Pier, or down at the McCormick right. Place, at a cost of $64 million. And I think they had, what did they have, under 100 people using that. To your point, now there's a cost and there's logistics and there's all kinds of things of moving elderly in mass around, which is way above my pay grade. But agree with you, they're sitting ducks. My mother's in an assisted living facility. They've got her, it's like solitary confinement. I'm happy about that. But she's still a sitting duck. People are coming and going out of that place. So I agree with you. I'm 100%.
It's awful. And I worry about that. And so, you know, I put in a couple calls to some friends just to say, is there a policy change potential with respect to that? Because at least in DuPage, though I saw it in Joliet as well, out in Will County, the numbers are staggering. Why isn't there some relief being directed that way? You know, I know I said this before, you know, since the beginning of recorded time, when a pandemic or an epidemic was, you know, was present, the sick, the elderly and the health compromised or vulnerable were quarantined for their own protection. And the healthy, they had to work to keep society going and to help provide for those quarantined, including feeding them. We have quarantined essentially everyone. And now we have 26 million people out of work. And you know, an economy that's been ripped to, I was going to swear, shred with absolutely no foreseeable recovery. And, you know, it's interesting. This is where I wanted to quickly go for a minute. What is being displayed on the national level right now is something, you know, I talked about when I was mayor, tried to do as a legislator, was talk about pension reform, meaningful pension reform. And I used to make the argument that 70% or 65% of something is better than 100% of nothing. And that argument went nowhere. I threw the number 65 or 70 or even 75% out, not attached to any real percentage, but just as an illustration that getting a majority of a really wonderful, luxurious Cadillac pension and healthcare benefit is sure a hell of a lot better than being promised everything and getting nothing. And while that getting nothing isn't yet in the, you know, too distant future, it's at least being talked about, because what, you know, this last tranche of CARES Act largesse passed by the federal government, there was an argument for some period of time that Democrats in the House and Senate wanted to put in additional relief for state and local government because of the COVID activities and the real pinch these governing units were experiencing in this emergent situation. And it was quickly jettisoned by Mitch McConnell in the Senate because he found out that was really code for some pension bailout money. I think McConnell made it clear he was open to COVID reimbursement for expenses, whether state or local, but he was not looking to bail out any fiscally irresponsible states, particularly with respect to outrageous pension obligations. And of course, that caused a whole bunch of, you know, kind of a shitstorm. And he talked, well, you know what, I would be interested in, I'm happy to talk about state bankruptcies. And then Governor Cuomo went crazy. Governor Pritzker went crazy. Notice who went crazy. The two states that have two of the largest pension, you know, unfunded obligations and the deepest fiscal positions. And notice the distinction, you know, McConnell and others saying, well, we'll back you up on your COVID expense. No question. We're just not bailing you out for your fiscal malfeasance. And so a line to me has been drawn. I think it's a good thing to bring the issue to bear. I don't know if it's as, you know, fundamentalist, but sure, and sure, you know, shows who's who in the zoo. From the Senate here in Illinois, wrote a letter to the Senate Congressional Caucus saying, hey, we could use about $42 billion. I think he had $15 billion going to the police. By the way, it's a lot of money, but it's nowhere near bailout money. And of course, that caused a lot of the ensuing back and forth and McConnell's bankruptcy rather than bailouts. What's going to be interesting, Bob, is, you know, I was around in 2008, 2009 when Downers Grove experienced at that point, the largest emergency situation because of the, you know, the Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers and the Wall Street just debacle and the economy going off hinge and causing unbelievable damage. That caused serious municipal tension for all kinds of towns, Chicago to Effingham and, yes, Downers Grove. What's happening now makes what happened then look like a daily, you know, we had a bad day at the office. There's always tomorrow. Yeah. This is fundamentally different. Yeah. And it's going to cause ramifications that I don't know if people are really paying attention to. And of course, it's going to happen while many people are feeling their own financial pinch, which makes it even more difficult to manage. There's a lot of things kind of coalescing and coming together at, you know, a totally imperfect time. How it's managed is going to be really interesting. You know, I hate to quote Rahm Emanuel, but there may be some good opportunities to restructure government and right-size it. My little idea? They should be talking to each other about police and fire consolidation. They should be talking to each other about shared services. They should be talking to each other about on vendor contracts together. They should be right-sizing their governments finally so that it fits the union. I mean, we have more firemen and fire apparatus, more police and police apparatus than we actually need. It makes us feel safe, and we're used to it, and it's a good thing, but now it's become largely unaffordable. Same thing with state government. I don't mean to pick on local government. This is across the board because we have so many units. This is an opportunity to right-size and reshape government in Illinois. Will we take it?
And that is understated.
All right, we're at 28 minutes and 17 seconds, Bob. I'm going to give one apology from last week. You know what it is? It was you, mister. You called Gladys Kravitz, Alice Kravitz, not once but twice. You offended the bewitched fandom. Actually, one guy called me and goes, you said it right. It was Gladys. I go, you know what? It's funny. He said Alice, and I thought maybe he was right, and I almost was going to apologize. So it was you, mister.
My deepest apologies.
So who knew? But I'm glad that we have a couple of, you know, a handful of some real loyal listeners, and I want to give them a shout out. And I did have a tip for the next week's agenda because of that. Cool.
Yeah, cool. We are going to talk about the state employee raises, no layoffs with state government. There's a lot to talk about, but thank you all for listening.
Bob, I'm Ron. This is The Pulpit. This is where we pique interest, test tempers. And yes, when we make a misstep, a grievous misstep, like misstating the name of a beloved character on Bewitched, we say sorry. So adios from The Pulpit. Thanks for listening. Cheers.